This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. I'm Celeste Quinn. Frederick Douglass is a famous American. He was born into slavery, escaped, and became a famous orator, writer, and leader of the abolitionist movement. He also championed women's suffrage, prison reform, and public education. After escaping slavery in 1838, Douglass and Anna Murray were married, but Douglass would also fall in love with another woman, Audley Ossing. Anna Murray, Douglass's wife of 44 years, had been a free domestic laborer. She could not read. Audley Ossing, Douglass's mistress for nearly 30 years, was a German-Jewish intellectual and heiress. And there was yet a third woman, Helen Pitts, a white woman who became Douglass's second wife. The stories of Anna and Audley inspired Jewel Parker Rhodes' new novel, Douglass's Women. Rhodes is also the author of the novels Voodoo Dreams and Magic City. Jewel Parker Rhodes, welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Pleasure to speak with you. Is this part of the story of Frederick Douglass well known?
You know, actually, it isn't very well known. There is another book by Maria Diedrich that talks about the love between Frederick and Audley, but I was actually 34 years old before I knew that Frederick had been married to a white woman, that he had had a mistress, and I had been a professor of African American literature for several decades. So I think in some sense this is like a closet secret that I uncovered through Frederick's own words.
Yeah. Did it change your thinking about Douglass, learning about this complicated situation that he was involved with these three women?
Well, it made him more human to me. And I think that to be more human, to have frailties and vulnerabilities, is key. I think sometimes we tend to say men in particular are perfect or they're role models and we put them on these pedestals. And I think it's actually more exciting to think of them as people with vulnerabilities and flaws, and yet despite them, they still went ahead to achieve great things. If he's perfect, if human beings are meant to be perfect, then, you know, what does that do in terms of my own aspirations? But if we're flawed and yet can still be extraordinary and wondrous, then I think it's actually more heroic to me.
Hmm. Anna Murray comes across as heroic in this book to me. She helps Douglass escape slavery. She was his wife. She loved him. She was the mother of his children. And yet, at some point, he says of her, in real life, he said this, "I am married to an old black log."
Isn't that awful?
How was he able to betray her?
I think that he segmented his life, that there was his commitment to abolition, his commitment to literacy, and I think in time he actually regretted having married Anna. She was considerably older than him. She was considerably darker, and the 19th century was even more color conscious than we are today. And I think that because she didn't learn how to read and write, he took that as a personal affront. When I was writing the novel, though, I took Anna's choice not to learn how to become fully literate as a way of her expressing her anger, her ire against him and his infidelity, so that she takes a tack that seems, in a sense, counterintuitive, but I think she wanted Frederick to see her. She wanted Frederick to know that a belief in God, a belief in morality, loyalty to one's family was equally important to literacy.
Hmm. There's a scene in the book where Frederick and Anna, married, are in the house of an abolitionist in Bedford, Massachusetts. They're not long married at this scene. She calls him Freddie, and he insists she call him Frederick.
Yes. I think in some sense you can talk about Frederick as having aspired to the bourgeois, having aspired to the modes and manners of the white bourgeois in particular, and there was a formality in relationships in the 19th century, and he wants her to acknowledge him as patriarch. But when she says Freddie, she's infusing that word with all the love, her big-heartedness, her spirituality, that she is a woman who has given her heart. And I think that that's the neat distinction between the two. Frederick Douglass wanted Frederick, you know, recognize my authority, whereas Anna just wanted the man. She wanted to offer him her heart, and she just wanted a Freddie.
Mm. Well, he says to her, Anna, please, I must insist. It is how cultured people speak. Frederick is even lenient. Most wives call their husbands Mr.
Yes.
And she says to him, these all white people you're speaking about? And he says to her, white people are our model.
Yes.
So here we have in the bedroom, in the privacy of a bedroom in an abolitionist's house, we have issues of race and gender, race and gender politics.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
How did these issues, in your imagination and from what you know doing the research for this book, how were these issues constraining people like Anna and Frederick?
I think in some sense, the race and gender politics really become another kind of slavery, another kind of chaining of one's own ability to see, assert, and love oneself. And I think that's why Anna, throughout the course of the novel, is such a heroine, because she's trying for another civil right. Though a free woman, she wants to assert, I am Anna. She wants to assert her own self-love. And yet Frederick, the era, are all putting these other chains upon her. So it's kind of ironic that the chains of racism and the chains of sexism, you know, were haunting the 19th century and still leave a legacy today. So for me as a feminist writing the book, I became really passionate because the greatest civil right is the assertion of a self-identity to be free. And if you can't be yourself with your husband, if you can't express yourself with your husband, then what is a woman to do other than at some point say, I either will be bound to him, I will be enslaved in a loveless marriage, or I will find a way to love him, see him clearly with all his flaws, and yet love myself enough to know that I am free and I will not be chained spiritually by the constraints of my society. Anna was constrained physically. I mean, she couldn't get a divorce. She couldn't leave her children. If she did that, they would have gone to Frederick. But she manages to free herself as a free woman by loving herself better. The tragedy is that Frederick missed loving such a wonderful woman, in my point of view.
Yeah. So then what brought Douglas and Adelie Ossing together?
I think the commitment to abolitionism, the commitment to the suffragette movement, the intellectual sort of marriage of the two minds brought them almost in a kind of wedded bliss of the mind. But I also think, now, and this is a contradiction, but I think it's part of the complexity. While Frederick was so color conscious, he also spoke of living in a colorblind society. I think ultimately he was not as colorblind, and society was never going to be as colorblind as he wanted them to be. But I think all his relationships with other women ended up being with other white women. So it wasn't just Otley, it wasn't just Helen Pitts, it was also Julia Griffiths and several women more. And I think he was trying to make a statement that he, an ex-slave, could in fact love a white woman, and that society would tolerate this. And interestingly enough, to some extent, society did. I mean, he didn't get killed, he didn't get lynched, and yet I don't think even his loving of Otley was the way that a woman wants to be loved. I think he objectified her in the same sort of racial, sexist, you know, parameters as he did with his wife.
She was another part of his life that he compartmentalized.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And I think in some sense, to be really honest about Douglas, I think he needed to compartmentalize many, many aspects of his life in order to stay intensely focused on his civil rights and on the civil rights movement. I think it's not unnatural or inhuman to compartmentalize. What is tragic, though, is that in doing so, two glorious women have been secreted through history. He never acknowledged them really publicly and said, oh, yes, they helped me. He never really gave them due credit. So in some sense, why is it 2002 we have to wait to reimagine the lives of these two women who, without doubt, helped him? He could not have done it all by himself. he needed their support on in the home, taking care of the children while he traveled, Otley translating his work, providing political strategy. He was not an island unto himself, and yet history would have us think he was. Mm. And I'm sure Frederick would like to think he was.
Yeah. Would you like to read something from the book that would give listeners a sense of the voices that you found for these two women?
I would love to. I'll begin with the very first voice of Anna. Because she couldn't read or write, I had the problem of how would she convey her story. So the novel actually opens with Anna on her deathbed, passing down her story to her daughter Rosetta, passing it down in the tradition of really African-American oral storytelling. So this is Anna. August 2nd, 1882, Cedar Hill, Uniontown, D.C. I used to feel him. I used to. Time once he told me I was the only free he needed. Time when he didn't want to get up from my arms. Time when I filled him, he filled me. The world loves Frederick Douglass, but I love Freddie. I loved him when he had no name excepting nigger this, nigger that. When he looked at me, he was broken then. When he needed me, my flesh grew hot and I opened myself calling Freddy. I thought the two of us would create a world. I'm dying now. Freddy died long ago. Was that a good thing? No more Freddy. Just the great abolitionist. Was that a good thing? See Mr. Death sitting in the rocker telling me to come on. I will, once I speak my mind, like Freddie did. He told his tale, left me out. Begin at the beginning, tell it true. Everybody knows Frederick's story. This one here, be mine.
That's Anna.
Yes. I just love Anna. Her voice just fills my soul. And I think she was a gift to me. I felt as though she was with me as I was writing her. And I think she was also reminding me that the bonds between mother and daughter, the care that we give to our family, the care that we give to a garden, that willingness to do whatever work is necessary in order to sustain your family and to sustain your own spirit, that sort of enriched and inspired me in a new way. It's one thing to live a life of the mind. We also have to live lives of the spirit and of the soul. Mm. And that's what Anna was telling me.
Yeah. And the other woman, she is cooler, not as fierce that way.
No, she's not. And that's an excellent way to describe her. She is cool, quite level-headed. And yet she, too, has this kind of passionate strain. But I think, unlike Anna, who will let it rush on out, you know, here's my love pouring out. At one point she says, love unlocks a woman's heart. I think what happens with Otley is that she feels, but then she locks and banks it all down.
So would you read a piece from the novel that gives us a sense of this other very different woman looking back at her time with Frederick?
This is Otley. She is writing in her diary. She's near her own sort of end of life's journey. And she is in Paris, August 21st, 1884. I didn't expect my life to end this way. Me, 58, sitting like a moonling wrapped in furs, trying to stave off chills. The thought of America makes my heart cold. It didn't always. I am the snow queen. Love's betrayal has frozen my heart sliver by sliver. Except for one small piece, my heart is ice. Frederick Bailey Douglass, dearest Douglass, do I dare say you did this to me? Or was the blame mine all along? I, Otley Essing, so smart, not smart enough. I'd best hurry, scribble these words before time disappears, love disappears. Before I'm so cold, so solid, I cannot move except across the ocean from which there is no return, no renewal. no gliding across the great Atlantic, no recrossing of seas, only stillness and death. Always, I'd wanted to sail to America, land of high purpose and dreams. Think of it, a bold experiment, to have one's customs, one culture begin anew, to be reborn, to carve from the landscape a new world, not a nightmare world, but a realm of magical dreams, a land so vast and wide, anything can happen. A land not chained or closed tight and small like Germany. I hadn't counted on love's treachery. I'm dying in Paris, the city of light, except there isn't any light. Douglas isn't here.
These women were real, but this is a novel, and in the author's note you say the women's characters were spun in your imagination. How did you begin imagining these two very different women and their relationships to one another and to Douglas?
Well, one thing that I had to do was to get their voices. I had to hear the clip sound of Otley, and I had to hear the sort of draw and sort of oral vibrance of Anna. But I think I really just sat at my computer sometimes and I just reimagined myself. I pretended I was inside them. They were inside me. And I just simply thought, what would it have felt like? How could they have accommodated Frederick? How could they have accommodated, you know, spending summers, over a dozen summers with one another, while, you know, Anna was in the kitchen and Otley was out in the garden with Otley, and yet the two of them must have crossed paths. They must have talked. And I know, because I have such a great love and respect for women, that they had to have found some way to sort of compromise, some way in order to make space for one another. And trying to imagine that space, that wariness, where they could keep their dignity and yet still love the same man, sometimes really pulled me apart emotionally. I would say of all the books I've ever written, this is perhaps the first that I've come closest to, I came closest to quitting. But in particular, the sort of pain of a woman loving and loving and giving and giving and yet not getting nearly, you know, half in return, so agonized me. In some sense, the relationships are characterized by a kind of mental and spiritual abuse. And yet these women, to differing degrees and in different ways, stayed. And in differing ways, to different degrees, they learned how to survive. Otley survived less well than Anna did. And trying to understand why she stayed, why she gave up having children, why she left Frederick Douglass all her money when she died, you know, why she just kept waiting for him one day to marry her, only to have Anna die and Frederick turn to a much, much, much younger white woman and literally not even notify her in advance that he was going to remarry. I guess in some sense I would say I'm a dramatic fiction writer, that I literally think that living life is not enough. I mean, that I want more. And so I sit for hours, days, months, and sometimes years on an end trying to be these people in my soul. So in some ways, I think I've come through this journey myself more empathetic, in particular to women who find it difficult to leave less than ideal relationships, that I needed to understand that you can know so much and yet have your own flaws. And in particular, Otley had the flaw of German Romanticism, a cultural tradition that taught her that without love, she was nothing. And ultimately, that undid her.
Remarkable story.
Thank you.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so very much.
Jewel Parker Rhodes has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Her new novel, Douglass's Women, is published by Atria Books.